Tonight, the work of scientific genius Nikola Tesla and the numerous ways he manipulated electricity to sometimes very frightening ends. Amazing technology. Next hour, you may very well be meeting the reincarnated Nikola Tesla. But in a moment, we'll be back with Sterling Allen on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, this hour, Sterling Allen joins us. He's going to be with us for the full program. Founder and CEO of the PES Network. Also, the New Energy Congress, which is comprised of energy professionals from around the world who review very promising new and emerging energy technologies. And he has made the term free energy more acceptable by relating it to solar, wind, geothermal, and other well-understood technologies while making the more exotic approaches not seem so crazy. Welcoming back to Coast, Sterling Allen. Sterling, how are you?
Good, George. It's been a while.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this, especially every time I hear stories about the grid and problems with solar flares, I always think, why aren't we on our own system at home? Will we ever get to that, Sterling?
Definitely. I think we're on the cusp of it. We're going to see these things coming out soon, not as soon as I'd like, but they're certainly emerging, and it's very exciting to be on the leading edge as a news and directory person and networking these things.
What will get us away from some of these types of reliances on other sources of energy where they make the money? Will we ever get to the point where it's less expensive and we have it readily available?
Absolutely. These clean energy technologies of the exotic sort that are coming out will not only be cleaner than solar and wind and geothermal, but they will be cheaper than grid power. They'll be cheaper than what you pay from natural gas, coal power plants. There may be some initial capital cost in buying the unit, but the return on investment will be just 2 to 3 years as opposed to 20 to 30 years with a solar system.
Now, you launched New Energy Systems Trust. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, we launched that on May 1st. It's basically a network to help bring these technologies of the exotic sort to market. And since there's enough of them that are actually in process of gearing up for production, we're trying to facilitate by bringing players to the table who can help them with whatever they need. And in our top five technologies, pretty much every one of those are at one phase or another of actually bringing these technologies to market, which takes, 12 to 18 months for a typical technology. And so when we say we're a good 12 months out, they're a good 6 months into the process of getting the manufacturing facility built and the machinery in place, the robotics, et cetera. And so the New Energy Systems Trust is designed to help bring the technology from A to Z that are of this exotic sort that are not getting the support that they should be getting out there in the mainstream.
Sterling, what do you think happened to like companies that, we all funded, the solar panel companies that go bust, getting a lot of money from taxpayers? Was it mismanagement? What happens there?
Well, the problem is that the status quo, the powers that be, are basically have a vested interest with the oil interest. They are in bed with the monopoly guys who have been running the planet for a century. And they give lip service to things like solar and wind because they're not going to be competing with oil and natural gas and coal anytime soon because they're so expensive. But when something truly breakthrough comes along that's going to make them obsolete, they zip their lips, they close their wallets, they slam the door, and they have a temper tantrum. And the thing is, there's a momentum going on that basically their days are numbered. The powers that be are going to be rendered obsolete, and mankind is going to be empowered through these free energy technologies that come out that give them the ability to have cheap power in their cars so they don't have to stop for fuel, in their airplanes, in their homes, in their gadgets, don't ever have to plug in. Hmm. That's the world of the future, and it's not that far away. The world of the Jetsons is on its way.
I think you're right. I think it's going to happen, and I think it's going to be a great time for all of us. Will we get away from any reliance on nuclear fuel in the, you know, those special plants?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the most exciting things happening right now, three of our top five exotics are cold fusion technologies of the Pons and Fleischmann tradition, where cold fusion means that you don't have to have the hundreds of millions of degrees Celsius that you see on the surface of the sun with fusion there. These are technologies that where you can get fusion taking place at relatively low temperatures, cheaply, affordably, using materials like nickel and hydrogen that are readily available, very cheap, and non-polluting. There's no radioactivity involved. And so nuclear power is going to be modified from these polluting sources to these non-polluting, portable, locally available. You can have a nuclear power plant through a cold fusion device in your basement that is totally safe. And that's coming within a year, I believe.
That's exciting. Next hour, you're going to introduce us to Patrick Flanagan, who may very well be the reincarnated Nikola Tesla. Ironically, 156 years ago, right around this time period, Tesla was born, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's so cool. He was born at the stroke of midnight with a lightning flash on July 9th. Actually, July 10th, at the stroke of midnight, boom, lightning flashed, and he was born. And the world has never been the same. What a man. And, you know, he wasn't just an inventor. The guy was an extraordinary human being. He wasn't in it for the money. He was in it for the planet. And so he didn't have any problem with coming up with a design that would give everyone energy affordably, cheaply, all over the planet from one broadcast station in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Wardenclyffe Tower. And this guy that's come along that I met last year and has kind of been tracking, he and his wife, extraordinary human beings as well. And I compiled a list of almost 20 reasons why I see him as being the reincarnated Nikola Tesla, including that he remembered when he was born, he remembered his previous lifetime. The veil was not drawn for him. That's very unusual in and of itself. By 8 years old, he was building Tesla coils. By 13 years old, he had his first invention called a neurophone. At 9.5 years old, he had a 14 megahertz Tesla coil making lightning bolts 6 feet long and enlivening the neighborhood so that a next-door neighbor picks up a toothbrush and gets an arc to his mouth at 4 inches away. He had to shut that down because the neighbors weren't very happy.
That's pretty dramatic, isn't it?
I mean, this is an amazing human being. The things, he's a prodigy child, and the comparisons, the analogies to Tesla are just endless, including... You know, when at the end of Tesla's life, when he died, the FBI basically raided his apartment and took all of his effects, all of his papers, and had sequestered those all this time. And one of the people was named Ralph Bergstresser. And he actually met Patrick Flanagan, and Patrick told him, hey, you know, I believe I was Nikola Tesla in a previous lifetime. And Ralph says, yeah, prove it. And so he says, draw me or tell me about the particle beam project, because that was something that was classified.
And it was classified, that's right.
Yeah, in their papers. Patrick drew a diagram, and Ralph says, I haven't seen that since I reviewed Tesla's papers, and I've never seen it anywhere else.
Wow. That's exciting. Well, we'll find out next hour all about Patrick Flanagan and this incredible possibility.
Yeah.
You have said, though, that some of Tesla's work was frightening. What did you mean by that?
I missed what you said. Some of it was what?
Some of his work was frightening. What did you mean by that?
Well, actually, that was Lisa. And I'm glad she said that, because actually I would like to set that at rest. Nikola Tesla was certainly a showman. He put on some pretty amazing shows. For a lot of his life, he knew how to make a show banger, And he'd have big sparks and arcs and things that would scare the pants off of us. And you wouldn't want to be in his place. But the reason he was able to do that was because he knew what he was doing. And he was so comfortable with electricity and how it worked and why it worked and what it could and couldn't do in different configurations. He knew where to step, where not to step, what to turn on, what not to turn on. And so to him, it wasn't dangerous. And ironically, I'm going to, you know, jump into the second segment where we're going to talk about Patrick Flanagan. He was somewhat similar in that when he was a kid at 3 years old, he drank a bunch of mercury so much that when he was 30 years old and had a blood test, they said he had more mercury in his blood than any human ever tested before.
Why didn't it kill him?
Well, it should have.
It really
it didn't. And he basically gave him some autistic, and he was stammering, stuttering, couldn't talk until he was like 5 years old. And finally, what it did is it destroyed a part of his brain that kind of is part of the risk hesitancy type of center. So he has basically no risk aversion. Very brave individual. And one time he was doing a handstand on a 50-foot ledge, or not a 50-foot, a 50-story building ledge. And he told me this evening, he said, well, you know, if I fell, I would have fell inward toward the building.
Well, maybe he's a reincarnated Walenda, huh?
And so what for you and I would scare the pants off of us.
Yeah.
For him was like, no big deal.
Unbelievable. Well, with Tesla, you know, he was building this free energy device. He was experimenting with it. Who was funding him? And then they pulled the rug from under him, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, that was J.P. Morgan. And he, in the conspiracy circles, is seen as one of the linchpins of the conspiracy toward establishing the New World Order, the whole Federal Reserve Bank. He was major player in that. And I'm a little bit puzzled as to why Nikola Tesla would even have anything to do with him, but he did. He was getting funded to build this tower. And when John or J.P. Morgan found out that this thing would not be something that he could get filthy rich over, and that basically he was giving power away to the planet, he pulled the plug and said, no way. You know, you're not going to do that project on my dime.
Yeah, he didn't want anything to do with giving things away for free. He was all profit motivated, wasn't he?
Of course, nowadays, with the technology we have, we could easily meter the receivers of this technology. And you know, jumping forward a little bit to what one of the things I wanted to talk about tonight, a good friend of mine, Carl Paulsness, has been playing with Nikola Tesla technology for a good decade, funded so that he's been able to work full-time. He's shown a lot of promise, and so various groups, starting with the Mennonite group, funded his research. And he's actually got a group of several people who are also being funded right now in his lab. And one of the points he made was that with this Wardenclyffe Tower, that was supposed to be able to broadcast both communications and energy, as well as it was a receiver. It wasn't just a broadcaster. It was both receiving energy and broadcasting it for a receiver to pick up.
Right. Well, it took it in and then spit it out again, right?
Right. And what it did is it basically activated the receiver. So the receiver turned itself into a receiver of energy. It became alive, is the way way Carl describes it. And so he says that he thinks that nowadays with modern circuitry that it would be possible to build a device that wouldn't require the tower as the kind of the instigator, that you could basically have a device on your person, in your car, in your house, on your spacecraft, that would basically lock into this etheric energy that Tesla was playing with and pull it in as much as you need, whenever you needed it, and you know shut it off when you didn't need it.
Was William Reich working on this as well? Did he call this Orgon, which was this source within the universe?
Yeah, there's actually a lot of researchers who are playing with it, including Wilhelm Reich and others. There, John Bedini, Tom Bearden.
Okay, that's right.
Peter Lindemann. Yeah, there's a lot of really brilliant people. And one thing that's really exciting about this is that there's not just one modality that we have access to tap. We've got a whole array of modalities. I estimate there's in the ballpark of 30 modalities of free energy, including solar, wind, geothermal, tide, wave, zero-point energy, gravity motors, cold fusion, etc. 30 modalities, each with several companies, the cutting edge one, with several companies nipping at the heels of each other to be first.
How many people, though, for example, here's the problem we're going to face with this. The power companies must employ millions of people around this country, right? Linesmen, people who, some people who read meters, even though they're putting smart meters in all over the place now, and they won't have to do that, but they must employ so many people that if we had a free energy source, Sterling, at everybody's house or at your car, what would happen to all these people and their jobs?
Well, if they are enlightened, they just jump ship. And the company adopts a new technology and becomes one of the distributors. And the employees get involved in the new technology and bring it forward, because we're going to need that same skill set in deploying these technologies. I'm not going to want to install one of these things on my home. We're talking about kilowatts of energy. And when you see plans on the internet that say, well, you can buy these plans for $100 and for less than $200, you can build one of these things yourself and power your house.
Baloney.
Well,
right?
You don't want to be playing with kilowatts of electricity. It's very dangerous.
But you would not put one of these Tesla-type devices on your house?
You would, but yeah. I wouldn't want to do it. I'd want to have somebody who's skilled at it do it.
Oh, I see what you mean. You mean you want a service person.
Power company, and you say, hey, we need to have these installed. You guys already know how all about electricity. Would you mind doing it for me?
All right, but once they're all installed, we'll just need a few maintenance people. That'll be it, right?
Yeah. And they're among the people who are benefited by this, so they don't have to work all the 40-hour weeks or more to make a living, because now their energy is so cheap that they can spend their leisure time developing what they really love doing. And if it doesn't happen to tie into the new energy system, they can develop some other skill that they're very good at and can become proficient at and love what they do rather than hate what they do for somebody else.
I'm just wondering if they take this technology, as they did when Tesla was alive, and bury it eventually. Isn't it true that when he died, they raided his office or his home and took all his plans?
They did.
They were afraid. They were afraid it was going to get into the wrong hands, or it was going to give us this free energy source.
It's probably all of the above.
I think so.
And not only did they didn't just sit on it. You know, that same year that he died, 43, was when you had the big Philadelphia experiment.
Yes, exactly.
And that employed some of Tesla's technology. And then the HARP energy system, or the HARP system, is almost 100% Tesla technology. That basically, when I was talking to Patrick, it was so upsetting to him to see.
Hold on for a second, Sterner. Hold on. We're going to come back. We'll talk about Tesla much more on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll bring in Patrick Flanagan, scientist who may be the reincarnated Nikola Tesla. I'll be back in a moment. More with Sterling Allen on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Sterling Allen, with us. Sterling, back to Nikola Tesla and his work. How did his system work? How did this tower work? How was it going to grab the energy out of the universe?
Yeah, you would think that with such a prolific inventor, with 700 patents to his name and mystique galore, that an answer like that would be very, very complex. But it actually boils down to one word, longitudinal waves. Well, two words.
And explain that.
Yeah. Think of a tsunami. How does a tsunami compare to a regular wave? If you see a wave, you're out on the beach, and you're out on the deck going out into the water a few feet, you can run as fast as a wave, right?
Mm-hmm.
How fast does a tsunami wave go?
Too fast.
600 miles an hour. That's as fast as a jumbo jet.
Oh, it's flying like crazy.
Yeah, because it doesn't propagate like a regular transverse wave. It's called a longitudinal wave, and it's caused by a massive displacement, such as from an earthquake or a meteorite, that causes the water to move hugely, as opposed to in these little tiny surface ripples. And so the propagation of a tsunami is like 4 feet as it goes along the surface. It's 600 miles an hour across the entire ocean. And they didn't even know this until the Chilean earthquake about 3 decades ago. I was watching a documentary on the Discovery Channel recently about how they learned about tsunamis. And before that, it was kind of a mystery. Where these things come from? Because they were just, it was outside of what science was thinking about. And because the waves propagate so differently, it's not the same kind of wave. It does move up and down. The surface of the water goes up 4 feet, and then it goes down 4 feet as the thing goes through. But it's only when it hits the shore that it starts compounding. And then, of course, you get these huge surges that go in and do all the destruction. So it's a very different beast. It acts very differently. And that's a really excellent illustration of the longitudinal wave versus the transverse wave.
How did he know that these waves existed?
Well, several things. First of all, he was gifted. And why he was gifted is, I think, the subject of our next hour.
Right.
As we talk about the possible reincarnation of him and who he was before he was Nikola Tesla, because Patrick also remembers lives before that. And he was a monk for 7 lifetimes before he was Nikola Tesla.
Huh.
Meditating, pondering, you know, tuning in. You know that Nikola Tesla was very gifted as an inventor. He didn't just think about stuff and chew it over and build a few things and tweak things left and right. He would get flashes of inspiration. They would come into his head, and he would actually complete the device in his head before he built it.
He was a little like Edison, wasn't he?
I don't think so, not in that regard. Edison was more of the build and you know, trial and error, and had lots of lab assistants to help and try this, try that.
The tinkerer, yeah.
Yeah, the tinkerer. One thing, talking about Edison, who's credited with the light bulb, Nikola Tesla did the fluorescent light bulb and the neon light. How many households and businesses in the United States don't have a fluorescent light bulb in them?
They all do, almost.
They all do. I mean, that was Nikola Tesla. And so even on something as simple as a light bulb, he did more than, I don't know if you can say more than, but is equal to Thomas Edison. And he's the one that brought us AC power, the radio. So Nikola Tesla was basically brought us, he brought the bedrock of modern civilization, AC was, power.
Wasn't he working on a weapon for our purposes that could crumble buildings with sound waves?
Yeah, he had that as well. I mean, the guy was arguably the most brilliant inventor who has come on this planet in its history. It's hard to think of somebody more bright and more prolific than Nikola Tesla. And that ability to visualize before he built. I mean, imagine the very first hydroelectric power dam by Nikola Tesla on the Niagara Falls was, they'd never built one of those before. And basically, he drew it out, and they built it like he said it, and it worked just like he said it would. Can you imagine somebody doing that today, that they would go straight to a full production unit without building a small prototype to test it out first?
That's a good point. He was a genius. We know that. And, of course, did he die disillusioned?
Absolutely.
He did.
He was so disillusioned. And because, you know, he wanted to help the planet. He wanted to stop wars. He wanted to give clean energy to the planet. He was arguing that the AC power of propagation of energy for long distances was not the best way. He actually described a DC transmission method for high voltage, long distance transmission. And that's been implemented by Siemens in the last few decades. And so, yes, he was very disillusioned with what he saw coming on the planet. And to tie it into Patrick Flanagan, who was born with a recollection of that lifetime and started out very prolific. And by the age of 13, he had surpassed what Nikola Tesla had done when it comes to Tesla coils.
And that's amazing.
And then when he became an adult, basically what happened is, as I look at this guy's life, he basically walked away from energy, and he went into healing. He went into spirituality. He wrote a book called Pyramid Power, which some people argue was the beginning of the New Age movement. That was Patrick Flanagan.
Amazing. Well, we'll find out a lot when we get him in about 15, 20 minutes here.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I forgot the question that spurred that response.
We were talking about how he died. He died depressed, you said.
Yeah. And that I asked Patrick about that. I said, you know, what's your response to how the U.S. government handled Nikola Tesla's technologies? He said he actually broke down and in tears as we were talking on Monday, yesterday, in preparation for the show tonight. He was so disillusioned and disappointed in mankind and how they took this technology and abused it and used it for war and not for peace. That he said, that's why I only give 1% of what I have.
Wow. Well, with Tesla's work, tell me about the Pierce Arrow car. What was that?
The Pierce Arrow car is one of the legends that is actually lacking in documentation about whether it actually existed. But those who have studied the life of Tesla and more importantly, it has been replicated and is in process of being worked to a point where it could be brought to market by some modern researchers. But what it was in his day, it was a black box where he took, with permission of the Pierce Arrow car company, was an electric, he took a car, converted it to electric, and on board he had an antenna that harnessed it energy from the ambient and gave enough energy for that car to go 90 miles an hour down the road, hundreds of miles at a time. And so basically you had a free energy car that once you bought the mechanism, you had the fuel source coming from the environment. And there's a researcher that we talked about in a previous episode, you and I, about a year ago, down in the Philippines, Ismael Avizo is still working on this, making progress, taking longer than what we'd hoped it would take.
Right. You thought it would have been ready by now, I think.
Yeah. I mean, if you asked me 10 years ago how long it would be before we had these devices, I would say about a year. And if you asked me 9 years ago how long it would be, I'd say about a year. But, you know, there's a lot of indications that these things really are getting closer because companies do have beta testers, they're doing alpha testing, they have production prototypes. You see assemblies being set up. You have manufacturing facilities being built. And you couldn't say that 2 or 3 years ago.
It seems like individuals are making this happen, not corporations. Is that a pretty accurate guess? Yeah.
Individuals, but more, it used to be that way, but more, these companies that are in our top five and runners up, they are companies with several, in some cases, the Death Cali in number two, they've got some 40 people on payroll working full time to bring this cold fusion technology to market. They're going to be making a big cannonball splash in August at a trade show over in Europe. They just had seven commercial interests go in for third-party testing, which went better than expected in terms of the amount of power that was produced. It wasn't without its bugs. There were some downsides as well, but that's to be expected in any new technology. And so there are companies now emerging around these things, but it's not coming from established. It's not coming from GE, it's not coming from GM, or from Siemens. It's coming from individuals who are in startup companies launching these things. And I would say that it follows the principle of new wine cannot be put into old bottles. It's human nature.
Well, maybe so. But in the long run, Sterling, do you think, truly believe that mankind is going to be able to get this energy, use it on any kind of basis, or is it going to get squashed?
The reason I say it's not going to get squashed is because we are in a period of transformation. We're going through a metamorphosis where it's out with the old, in with the new. The old paradigm of control and fear-mongering is at its heyday right now, but their days are numbered. And my reading of the Bible and other prophetic writings say that the bad guys don't win. They're basically playing out their hand. The addict is about to hit the wall, and a new era is going to come in. And the new era is going to be enlightened. It's going to not use these technologies to rape the earth. It's going to use the technologies to clean the earth and to live in harmony and in peace. That's the world we're going to. And so along with the technology, there has to be a spiritual transformation. And that's one thing, coming back to Patrick Flanagan, this lifetime of his is focused on that, on the peace, on the spiritual living, on the healthy living, not on the technology and the energy that can help the world be more productive. He did that in the Tesla lifetime and started this lifetime with that. I'm not saying that I'm 100% certain that Patrick is or was Nikola Tesla, but it certainly does make an interesting case.
And we'll ask him, but does he believe he's Tesla?
He does. He remembers the lifetime, and when he was 7 years old, he told his mom out of the blue that he was Nikola Tesla in a previous lifetime. She said, "Who's that?"
Well, you know, if we went out and polled everybody, Sterling, I'm not sure many people would know who Tesla was.
And a decade ago, that would be the case. But I think nowadays, maybe 1 out of 1,000 wouldn't know who Nikola Tesla is.
Really? I think it would be more than this. This audience, it would be huge. They'd know.
Right.
But I think if you went out and talked to people who didn't listen to a program like Coast to Coast, I don't think they'd have any idea who he was. I bet if you went into a high school, maybe none of the kids would know.
I would be surprised if it's that. Maybe it's maybe halfway between what you're describing and where I'm describing it. Of course, you know, I'm right in the thick of it, so, and I don't hang around with normal people, so I'm a bit biased in my outlook.
Sterling, listen, let me tell you something. You go out and do a poll with 100 people and ask them who the vice president is, I would say 65 to 70% of them wouldn't know. They won't know Biden's name.
And it may be the same percentage that wouldn't know who Nikola Tesla is.
Well, if they don't know him, they're not going to know Tesla. Now, they might know a sports figure. They might know a Hollywood actor or actress. But that's a sorry state of affairs, isn't it?
Well, you know what's exciting, talking about the Hollywood, is there are some people in Hollywood who are getting excited about this stuff. I had an interview with Larry Sire in Hollywood a few days ago, and he just uploaded a video or an MP3 of our recording. He's won 5 Grammy Awards, I believe, for his work with the Dixie Chicks and other. I mean, this guy knows what he's doing. And so if you want to go check out that recording, you know, Hollywood's starting to pay attention. And what's going to happen is, I know another person who works, is a screenwriter for, what's his name? Little brain fart here.
That's all right.
Anyway,
go ahead.
He's a screenwriter for one of the big Hollywood guys, and he wants him to write a free energy script into the next series that they're doing.
Well, that's pretty good. Has anybody ever done a movie, not a documentary, on Nikola Tesla, or somebody like somebody would play the role of Tesla?
Yeah, absolutely. There's an excellent movie, The Prestige. It was a fictional movie.
All about Tesla.
Yeah, it was based on actual events. And it's very well done. And Nikola Tesla was one of the primary actors, or one of the figures in the movie.
You know who played him?
I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm not really good with remembering details, but we do have, if you just, you know, Google The Prestige, I think it was David Bowie.
David Bowie played Tesla?
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty interesting. All right, well, you know, let me tell you something. With all the work you're doing, what are you doing these days? What's going on?
Well, my focus right now is on highlighting the top 5 and in facilitating them coming forward. Most of our news on a day-to-day basis is touching on the top 5, giving people updates on what's going on, what's going down. We do a weekly low-energy nuclear reactions, or LENR, also known as cold fusion, synopsis. There's so much news in the alternative media now that it's hard to keep up with. And so each week I go and I compile it all into a weekly synopsis, and there's between 20 and 50 stories a week, different people that are tracking it out there. I keep that going. And then we've got this New Energy Systems Trust, where we're trying to set up a network, or in process of setting up a network, so that we have all the professional services ready to go. We've got licensees ready to go. We've got customer lists ready to go. So that when one of these things is ready to rock and roll, boom, all we have to do is just plug them in and off they go.
Perfect. You're right, by the way. Well, a couple of our listeners have already sent me a message that says, yes, it was David Bowie who played Nikola Tesla in that movie, The Prestige.
Yeah. I love that movie.
So you got a good really memory there, Sterling. It works.
Say again?
I said you've got a good memory. It works. All right, we're going to come back. I'm going to have you introduce us to Patrick Flanagan next on Coast to Coast AM.